Runoff, a crime novel about election fraud, evokes a curious timelessness of classic detective fiction. A noir gem, says Mystery Scene Magazine. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 8. How Now. I sat on a stool in a dive bar called the How Now in downtown South San Francisco. It was dim and pleasantly cool inside. The only other customer in the place was in conference with a quart bottle of Bud and a tabletop Junior Pac-Man game along the faux brick wall behind me. The bartender, a rail-thin character with a flat top and scythe-like sideburns, put a shot of bourbon down at my elbow. I reached for it with still trembling fingers and sloshed some of the liquor onto the cigarette-scarred wood. The bartender laughed. "We can get that for you in a sippy cup if you want." I gave him a tolerant smile and told him it wouldn't be necessary. I had come to the bar to decompress after my session with the South San Francisco cops. The good news was they weren't charging me with anything, and they hadn't made the connection to Bowman's murder in the city. The bad news was they impounded the Glock, and my cover as a reporter on a Chinese-language paper had been blown all to hell with the CVT people. And far from being appreciative for my having saved his life, Dozier was furious at being duped. When he finally thought to ask how I'd come to be carrying a concealed weapon, Jane had to stop him from slugging me when I copped to being a licensed PI. But with the things I gleaned from Dozier before he rushed me, and the information I collected from Jan and the detective assigned to the case, I was able to piece together a coherent picture of what happened. It went something like this. The chief engineer's name was Guy Berger. He had worked at the company for 3 years, leading development of the software that controlled CVT's touchscreen machines. Last September, just before the product was to be released, he quit over a dispute with Dozier about stock. He claimed Dozier had cheated him out of thousands of shares he was due. Dozier and the venture capitalists who funded the company said not. Despite siding with Dozier, the board made a token offer of additional shares, but it wasn't enough to convince Guy Berger to return. Over the intervening weeks, he bombarded Dozier and the board with phone calls, emails, and letters arguing his position, but he never returned to CVT headquarters, much less threatened anyone. All that changed when he outfitted himself with a shotgun and ammo, pulled around to the back of the building, and parked by the rear exit where smokers often stepped out for a cigarette break. He must have blocked the door from closing when the last smoker returned inside, waited until everyone was off the stairwell, and crept up to the fifth floor. He went first to Dozier's office, fired the shotgun at his empty desk chair, and then charged through the building searching for him. "Pam's" was a scream I heard from inside the conference room, the clubbing noise Guy Berger hitting her with the butt of the shotgun when she was too terrified to answer his question. Jan had hid behind a sofa. I found her woozy, but not too badly injured after I pulled Dozier to his feet and walked him out into the lobby. She was the only one besides Guy Berger who'd been hurt. I knocked back the shot of bourbon and signaled the bartender for another round. He disengaged himself from a daily racing form he'd been annotating with 4 different colored inks and reached for the bottle of 10 High. He grinned at me as he poured, and I could see him working up to another sippy cup remark when my cell phone rang. The number was blocked, but I had a pretty good idea who it would be. "Hello, Mrs. Lee," I said without waiting for her to identify herself. "I gather you got a phone call from the South San Francisco cops."
"Yes," said the Dragon Lady, surprised. "They told me what happened. Was what you did really, really necessary?"
I think if you asked Dozier,
He'd say it was pretty damn necessary. And the next shotgun shell probably had my name on it.
Have you ever killed a man before?
Her voice was unusually quiet.
Yes.
The line was silent for a moment. Then she said, Where are you now?
Having a bourbon tranquilizer.
I see. Do you think this is in any way related to the election fraud?
If there's anyone who would be in a good position to rig the software, it would be the chief engineer. And if he had a grudge with the company, what better way to get even than to sabotage the election and have CVT take the blame? The problem with that theory is he'd have to publicize the fraud for CVT to get into trouble. Instead, he seems to have been focused on a much more old-fashioned way of getting even.
You're assuming his motive was simply to get revenge. Maybe it was to get the compensation he felt he was due. Did you consider that he might have been trying to extort stock or money from the company with the threat of exposure? Perhaps Dozier refused to pay, and only then did he try to kill the man.
I was impressed in spite of myself. I guess the Dragon Lady didn't get to be the Dragon Lady by being dumb.
That could be, I allowed. I took a sip of bourbon from the shot glass and watched as the bartender frowned and pointed at a crudely written sign taped to the mirror behind the bar. No cell phones. I turned my shoulder to him.
I'll tell you one thing I didn't consider, that you had your own touchscreen voting system company. Seems like something like that might have come up in our first conversation.
Don't get too far on your high horse, Mr. Reardon. I'm against touchscreen voting and always have been. I have always felt there is a risk of election fraud, and just as importantly, I have always felt it had the potential to disenfranchise the Chinese community, especially the older non-native English speakers in Chinatown, because of their discomfort with the technology and the challenges of ballot translation. When the Elections Commission first passed a motion to look at the systems, I fought it. When I lost that fight, and they voted to put out an RFP, I decided that if I couldn't prevent use of the technology, I would at least ensure the vendor selected had a workable solution for Chinese. So I formed my own company and put in a bid. But I lost that battle too. The commission endorsed the director's recommendation of CVT, even though their proposal was $100,000 over ours and didn't incorporate full ballot and audit trail translation. They claimed we lacked experience in the application area.
So here we are.
Yes, Mr. Reardon, so here we are. Two people have died since you started the investigation, and we still don't have an answer. What are your next steps?
She didn't sound so darn quiet now. This was the old Dragon Lady back with a vengeance. I saw in this morning's paper that the Green Party is having a rally at New College. It's being co-sponsored by the San Francisco Tenants Union, and I figured it'll give me a good opportunity to scope out Padilla and his supporters.
Very good. My daughter has a question for you.
She does?
She asks if you're still planning to perform at Shanghai 1930 this evening.
Yes. Yes, I am.
I never understood my late husband's fascination with jazz. And I understand Lisa's even less. But it seems to have worked in your favor, Mr. Reardon. I've asked Lisa to give you something. Remind her if she forgets.
Sure, I said, but she'd already hung up. I pushed the rest of the bourbon aside and stood. The bartender looked up from his racing form and mumbled something about freaking cell phones. I put what I owed him on the bar and then snapped an extra 10 under his nose.
Let me see you smile, I said.
He obliged me. He had beautiful teeth, but they weren't indigenous to his mouth, which put him in company with me. I dropped the bill on top of the raising form and sauntered out of there. My world seemed a much better place now that Lisa had confirmed a return visit.
You have been listening to Runoff,
A book hard-boiled great James Crumley described as a smart, funny, spooky, often touching, always entertaining romp. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.